I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You will hear it again today. Someone will recount for you where they were at the moment when they heard the news of the first plane, where they were when the second plane struck. These are details that matter because they place each one of us in context of an event. It is a personal link. That's why we're asking on the second anniversary of the September 11th attacks what it means to be an American on this day. How has the answer to that question, what does it mean to be an American, changed over the last 2 years? We've invited several guests to be with us through the hour, and we'll hear from them. Primarily, though, this is your show, and we're hoping you'll share some of your thoughts with us today. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Earlier this morning in New York City, family members gathered at the World Trade Center site to hear the reading of the names and honor those who died with a moment of silence. Frank Doyle worked in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. Frank died there, along with all the others, 2 years ago. Last year, as the names were being read, I spoke with Frank's best friend, Chuck Mathers. Chuck explained at the time why he'd gone to the ceremony.
I am here as a proxy for Frank's family and his friends. He was a father, and he was a guy who revolved around his daughter the way a planet revolves around the sun. He would dissolve around her. His then two-year-old little girl, Zoe, was the light of his life, and his little boy, Garrett, was right behind her.
Chuck Mathers is joining us again 1 year later on the telephone. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
Where are you now?
I'm about halfway up Mount Tremblant, which is one of the larger mountains in this part of Quebec. I'm about an hour and a half north of Montreal.
And is where you are and what you're doing in some way connected to September 11th?
Most definitely. I am with Frank's wife, and we just dropped off his two young children at their nursery school. And I'm with Frank's brother and some of his best friends. And we are climbing this mountain this morning, and we're going to have a little prayer at the top. And we think that it's something that he would want us to do. He was into fitness. He was incredibly fit for a man of his age, which I would constantly remind him was a couple years older than me. And we're just very happy to be together and to remember him today.
How is the family doing?
I would say the family is doing very well. His wife, Kimmy, is probably the second most courageous person I've ever known, the first being Frank. And she has done a miraculous job bringing her two young children along. And the children are doing fantastic.
Chuck, is September 11th a day that you set aside specifically for your friend Frank, or is it something else?
For me, primarily, it's for my friend Frank and my friend Frank's family. That really eclipses everything else on this day. I do have some thoughts on the issues that you discussed leading in to my interview, but primarily it's a day for Frank.
So help us with one or two of those, because as you heard, we're asking people what it means to be American and whether or not the answer to that question has changed over the last couple of years.
The answer to that question has changed for me in that I now understand more fully that at times to be an American means to sacrifice. My father was in World War II, and my older brother, who was 13 years older, narrowly missed Vietnam, thank goodness. And thank goodness I didn't have a war to contend with. And I suppose in that sense I was lucky in that I did not have to fully appreciate what it is to be American at times, and it involves sacrifice, and I know that fully now.
As I listen to you, I wonder whether or not you place those feelings about other people and other experiences at other seminal moments in the country in the way that you live your life now as an American, in the way that you regard your freedom as a citizen in the country, that sort of thing.
I'm not sure I follow your question, Dick.
How is it different for you day to day to be an American now? I mean, I hear what you're saying about comparing yourself to other people in other times. How about you?
It's different for me in that I now have a 9-month-old daughter, for instance, and I now have concerns that I wouldn't have had over 2 years ago. It will never change my behavior. It will never change the way I conduct myself, but I do feel a sense of vulnerability that I did not before. That doesn't mean I'm going to change the way I do business. I'm not, and I'm resolved to go where I want to go and do what I want to do. But, you know, and that people who have children have a whole laundry list of concerns in the back of their mind that they carry around with them every day, I think. And I think I'll just have to add one more concern as my beautiful little girl goes off into the world.
Chuck, I want to thank you for joining us and encourage you to enjoy the day on Mont Tremblant.
Thanks very much. It's a beautiful day up here, just as it was 2 years ago, and we're going to do just that.
Okay, that's great. And our best to Frank's family as well.
Thanks so much.
Chuck Mathers joining us on the phone from halfway up Mont Tremblant in the province of Quebec. Joining us today from a studio in Newark, New Jersey, is Kevin Coyne. You may recall Kevin as the author of Marching Home to War and Back with Men of One American Town. Well, the town happens to be Freehold, New Jersey. Kevin was on the program this past spring talking about the book. He's also a professor at Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. And as I said, he's in a studio in Newark, New Jersey. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
I was struck and thinking actually of you when I heard Chuck talking about seeing himself as an American in context of how he understands what it is to be a citizen of this country, in large part through the experiences of people in the Second World War. I'm wondering whether or not you're or have been seeing it the same way yourself.
Yeah, the word that Chuck said that jumped out at me was sacrifice. In writing that book, I spent several years trying to get in the heads of people who were alive during the Second World War, people who had grown up in the Depression and gone off to every corner of the world to fight. And that was a word that was kind of second nature to them. It wasn't something they thought about. It was a part of their character, as a part of the way they saw the world. And I think that's something that has struck me in the last 2 years, is that people have come to – you hear people say that word more than you heard them say it before.
When you talk to the people who explained how World War II had changed their lives, were they able to express it to you in terms that seem today simpler than the circumstances and the lives and the choices that we face today?
Well, I wouldn't say simpler. I would say more profoundly. I think one thing September 11th did was give us a marker in history, our own marker in history, as this is something enormous that people will remember for many, many decades later, that I was somehow a participant in. Everybody who was alive during the Second World War had that. Everybody, whether you were, at the Bulge or whether you were at a Air Force base in Oklahoma, you felt connected to that larger thing. So is that a simpler thing? I'm not sure it's a simpler thing. It's more, the politics were complex back then as well. I mean, the Soviet Union went from being our ally to being our enemy within the course of a few months. But there was a sense of profundity, I think, a sense of depth, a sense of connection to these very large things. And I think people have started to feel that a little bit in the 2 years since the attacks.
I guess When I use the word simpler, Kevin, I'm thinking in terms of there being less confusion about terms like patriotism, being patriotic, loving one's country. That wasn't a difficult thing for people to think about, to talk about.
No, it wasn't, and I think it's become much less difficult for people to talk about that afterward. If you ask me what do I find different about after September 11th, I find it harder to read the Declaration of Independence without choking up. Every 4th of July in my family, it's our tradition as we read it. We sit around, we pass it around the table. Everybody reads a paragraph. And the first in 2002, the first time we did it after that, we had a particularly large family gathering, and it was hard for me to read it without feeling that sort of well of emotion. It was a very spontaneous thing. It's not something I thought about before, but it hit me quite profoundly, quite directly.
Explain that a little bit more. Was it because you wanted to be sure in yourself that the words still mattered?
They did still matter, and okay. I think the swell of emotion was the sense that they matter all the more, and they matter to more people. Those words are not just words. Those words are the founding philosophy of our nation. I don't think it's an accident that in the last 2 years, among the largest bestsellers have been founding brothers Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. I think it's a very it may not be conscious, but I think it's a very direct response to this to the attacks that this is this amazing experiment in democracy that has worked, and look at it, and we're proud of it, and we're going to sing God Bless America, and we're going to read the Declaration. I'm on the council in my town, the town council, so I always, every week I would stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance, which is something a lot of adults haven't done since grammar school, and I always did it because I was, that's what we do before meetings. And that simple act became more powerful, and you could see it when people would come to the meetings, people who hadn't said it in a long time, they had just come to a meeting for the first time, they stand up at the beginning, you could see it in their eyes. You could see, wow, this does mean something.
I mentioned earlier in the program, Connection listeners, that our number is 1-800-423-8255, and we do want to make sure that you're included in the program today. Let's take our first call from Fort Drum, New York. Erica is joining us. Hi, Erica.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you for calling.
Thanks.
So what do you think? Has your sense of being an American changed in any way in the last 2 years?
Slightly. I am currently an active duty captain at Fort Drum, New York, and my husband is stationed in Afghanistan. Basically, I'm the front of fighting the war on terrorism. I think that conventional warfare has changed within the last few years. Unlike our predecessors, veterans of World War I, II, and Vietnam, it was somewhat clear maybe who the enemy was. Now we're fighting different types of wars in which you're not sure who the, quote, enemy is, and you put in positions where you fight in urban areas, in which we as a military are still training how to do.
Is it different wearing a uniform today than it would have been if I'd asked you that question a couple of years back, Erica?
I think it has. We all have a lot of pride in the uniform that we wear, and we definitely like to represent this company or this country. I'm proud to be an American, and I know most people that wear the uniform should be proud to be an American, and we're fighting for the freedoms that everybody else in this country has, and it seems like the sacrifices that a lot of service members are enduring right now have increased because there are so many different fronts and we're unsure when they're going to end.
Are you going back out?
There's a possibility I could be leaving in about 4 months. So
for Afghanistan, for Iraq?
Probably for Iraq. So, I'll go and definitely be proud to be serving this uniform, but 2 years ago, I can remember myself sitting at the desk at Fort Bragg, and I heard that the first plane hit the Trade Center, and we all thought it was kind of a farce. And then when the second plane hit, we knew something was changing. And I think all of us that wear the uniform knew, the world as we know it is going to change, especially, the way that we serve. And it has, and it probably will continue.
Erica, I want to thank you very much for calling in, and if you head out, stay safe. 1-800-423-8255, Connection listeners. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And a very simple question on this, the second anniversary of 9/11, and that is, what does it mean to you to be an American on this day, 2 years after 9/11? How do you see yourself in context of your neighborhood, your town, your city, your state, and also in a larger sense in the world? Kevin Coyne's with us. He's the author of Marching Home to War and Back with the Men of One American Town. We'll be bringing in a couple of other guests shortly. Kevin, I wanted to just come back to you in your role as a town councillor. Is that right? Is that what you call yourself? Town councillor?
Town councilman. Yeah.
And when you're talking to people about small town issues, just things that would be a part of our lives, whether there's a 9/11 or not, are you in any way registering changes in people's attitudes, different ways of dealing with government, with civic institutions? Can you pick up any of that?
They stopped coming to scream at us quite as loudly in the first months. That went away, though, fairly quickly. But there's one particular issue that I was thinking about this that I noticed. We have in our town, we've had over the last 10 or 15 years a large influx of undocumented immigration, particularly from Mexico. And there was a sort of a wary tolerance of that. It was a large explosion. There are a lot of issues involved in terms of housing, in terms of schools and costs. But what happened after September 11th, I noticed, was the tolerance for that really got strained. And it wasn't just before that. And this is my sense from the level of complaints that would come to me. People would complain because, well, you know, there's too many of them. They don't need to be here and they're not citizens, blah, blah, blah. Afterwards, it became something slightly different. I said, you know, they're not Americans. That was the word. And the theme, I think, was September 11th made it clearer to people that there's a cost to being an American. It's for Erica, who spoke before, it's the cost of actually serving. For all the guys who served in the Second War in Vietnam, it was actually putting on a uniform and putting yourself in the line of fire. For most of us, however, it's paying taxes. It's paying a large portion of our income, so other people will do that. It's participating in the small community wherever you live, but also the larger community of America. And I had this sense, and I still have this sense, this is an ongoing thing. Some of it was isolationist, was, yes, you know, we need to close our borders and to keep this. But some of it also was, you know, if you're here, you need to be part of the program.
We're joined now by John Lawrence. John is the author of The Cat from Way, a Vietnam War story. Connection listeners will remember him coming here to talk about that book with us, and also the fact that John covered the war in Iraq for Esquire magazine, NPR, and the Columbia Journalism Review, and also spoke with us about his experiences there. He's joining us on the phone from Guildford, England. Hi, John.
Good morning, Dick.
It's nice to have you on the program, And I know you've been listening. I'm interested, as you listen to Kevin talk about the price of being an American. You chose after the Vietnam War to leave the United States to live in England. You've been there what, almost over 30 years now?
Yes, I left in 1971, came to London to work for CBS News, and decided to stay. My reasons for leaving America were complex. At the top of the list probably was the fact that I got to be London bureau chief for CBS News. But I was also very disillusioned with my country at the time. The Vietnam War was the biggest single issue, but the efforts by students and other anti-war activists around the country to change the way that a political business was being done at the time were being frustrated, especially in 1970 when the students were killed by National Guard troops at the campus of Kent State University while trying to express their democratic right to protest the invasion of Cambodia, as the issue was at the time. I felt that marked more or less the end of the movement, as it was called at that time, the anti-government, anti-war, pro-democratic freedom movement, as it had come into being during the Vietnam War, and it was the time of Spiro Agnew attacking the press and Richard Nixon in the White House. I felt it was time, and violence in the streets of New York where I lived, all combined to make me decide to make my fortune abroad.
Now, tell me whether or not life as an American living abroad in the last 2 years has changed for you, in your mind.
Life itself has not changed significantly, other than the fact that I spent some time in Kuwait and Iraq during the war and have continue to keep in touch with soldiers of the battalion I covered with 101st Airborne. They're still there. And so I have this concern for Americans and others, of course, but particularly for Americans and especially for the soldiers who I spent that month with during the war. I keep in touch with them. My daily life hasn't changed that much except around this time of year because the people who were on the same airplane I was on September 11th, 01, and I, and my daughter, my 24-year-old daughter now, all keep in touch by email as much as possible.
Let me just interrupt you and back up a bit, John. You were flying on September 11th, 01. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was flying from London to Charlotte to Sarasota to go to my father's funeral. He died an old man after a good life, and we were going to the funeral, and sometime between 10 and 11 a.m., we were flying over New England, inbound for Charlotte, and there was a great drama on the plane. The lights were turned off. We lost altitude very fast. The co-pilot, a very nervous, frightened co-pilot, or perhaps it was the steward, told us that we were entering a terrible thunderstorm, and we all had to strap in. People broke out in tears, and then suddenly we were on the ground in Nova Scotia, where we spent the next 3 nights and 4 days. We discovered later from the captain that what had happened was they knew that there were air attacks going on in New York and Washington. They knew that they had to take extreme precautions to make sure it didn't happen to them. It was a U.S. Airways flight. And so what the pilot did was he barricaded the cockpit door. He armed his two male stewards with fire axes, emergency fire axes, and ordered the rest of the cabin crew to keep an eye on 5 young Arab men, one of whom was dressed in combat fatigues.
These men were just passengers on the flight, as far as...
It turned out they were just passengers on the flight. But for the 12 hours that we spent sitting in that airplane on the runway at Nova Scotia, we didn't know that. And so there was a degree of tension in the plane. And as a result of that and the next 4 days that we spent together, the passengers on that plane and my daughter and I have bonded in a way. We tell one another what we're doing. We mark the anniversary. And in that sense, Dick, my life has changed. There was a trauma involved. We didn't get to the funeral. That is, it went ahead without us. None of the immediate family, several members of the immediate family were not able to get to the funeral. So it's all very emotional for me.
I do want to come back to a couple of elements of what you've raised, but I want to also, as I said at the outset of the program, make sure that we're making space for people calling in. Let's go to Columbia, South Carolina. CP's joining us. Hi, CP.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. The thing that I was going to bring up is down here in small America, getting away from the big cities and all, it really hasn't made a whole lot of difference. Every time you pick up something on the news, you hear about it. But for me personally, what 9/11 was a wake-up call for the rest of the world. We haven't been listening to the rest of the world, and they finally got our attention. And I don't know what we're going to do with it, because some of the people that we call terrorists have an opinion, and we don't listen to it, whether it's the poor people in the world or whatever. But that's what it means to us, because to me, in my life, the real terror is an automobile accident. Something like 9/11 is sort of like winning the lottery. It's there, but it's not really an important thing. The terror is riding down the highway and somebody turning to you, and that's the end right there. But
CP, when you say that the people got the nation's attention on September 11th,
right,
2001, are you saying at the same time that they got your attention, that your own way of looking at the rest of the world has changed?
Sure. It sure has. Because before, when the terrorists, we call them, would strike overseas, it was just sort of a news event and we'd forget about it. But, you know, lives were lost then because we weren't listening to, well, these people are bad or good or wrong or indifferent. They have a right, I guess, to have their opinion. It's just bad the way they try to express it and get our attention. But That's what it means to me.
Thanks for your call, CP.
Thank you.
I want to turn to Vivian Gornick, who's been listening in on the line. Vivian will be known to a number of us as the New York writer, author of a number of books and essays, including the memoir Fierce Attachment. She also teaches writing at Sarah Lawrence College. Hi, Vivian.
Hi.
I would imagine you're listening to CP, who feels a long way away from New York, that sitting where you are right now, you have quite a different sense of 2 years after the event.
Well, no, actually, I was very happy to hear CP's opinion, as it dovetails very, very strongly with my own. Yes, I will tell you how I feel. I live in Greenwich Village, and 2 years ago today, just about this time, I was standing across the street from my house in a crowd of people watching the World Trade Center burn and watching those buildings fall. And I have lived with that for 2 years, as every other New Yorker has. And I will tell you how it's changed me as an American. My first thought was, we have never, ever imagined that we could ever in the flesh know war as the rest of the world has known. I watched those buildings burn, and this is how I thought the world had changed forever, that now we know we are not immune from it. We have joined the century. We have joined the world. We will not be assured ever again that we cannot be bombed to smithereens. And my second thought was very much like CP's. I thought, now I see I am living in a world where millions and millions of people hate us. They hate us for the power that we are and the power that we exert and the way we have determined their lives, and they are willing to die rather than go on living in a world that we have helped to make. Those were my thoughts then, and those have been my thoughts for nearly 2 years. And to a large degree, perhaps this is projection, I feel that the city of New York continues to reflect this. I don't feel super patriotism here at all, and I don't feel terror here at all, but I feel a tremendous sadness. This city feels subdued as never throughout my life have I ever imagined that it could feel as it does now. And it has never stopped feeling that way.
Give me an example of what you mean by the city feeling subdued.
That's a little hard. That's hard to detail. It's just an odd, New York, with all its noise and all its brutishness and all its danger and all its elation, there is always a kind of an odd lightheartedness in everything that's happening. Street theater, the constant, endless, unexpected encounter, the way in which people recreate their lives every second on the street, in the subway, in the stores, in the theaters, in the restaurants,
right.
Everything. It's hard to put my finger on it, but that lightheartedness feels gone.
Does it fit for you? Are you less,
Absolutely.
Are you more subdued or less irreverent, for example?
Absolutely. No question about it. And I don't think a week has gone by in 2 years that September 11th hasn't come into my head, that I haven't seen those towers burning. But these are always the thoughts that accompany it. You know, in the last year, at least a dozen books have been written with the words American Empire in their title. And as somebody wrote, some journalist wrote not too long ago, years ago when you would see those words in a title, you would know you were listening to somebody from the left, right? Some critical voice from the left. But now that's not true any longer. Yes, it is true. The great biographies of the great Americans keep coming out. But it's also true that an astonishing array of critiquing of America in the world has also come out. And this is, I share that view. I share it entirely. I thought, as I thought then and I think constantly, when this happened, as we stood there and watched those towers burn, and I realized what it meant, I realized the millions of people who viscerally hate us in the world, I thought America was going to take a step backward and that our government was going to take a statesmanlike view of what was happening and would understand that there was a huge emotional influence at work that was against us and that this is what we had to face. Instead, our government did exactly the opposite.
Vivian, just a quick last question. What are you going to do with the rest of your day?
I'm going to do various things, but actually I'm going to walk around the city a lot.
Just get out.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us.
Okay.
Nice to have you on the program. Vivian Gornick is a New York writer, author of a number of books and essays, including the memoir Fierce Attachments. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Chloe's joining us. Hi, Chloe.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I've got class in about 10 minutes, but I'm so excited listening to this show, hearing everybody's opinions.
Well, what are you thinking?
Well, I was just thinking about how, as a student, my peers and myself have really been sort of forced to form our identities as Americans very quickly. Like 2 years ago, we were all at school, of course, when the towers were hit, and it was very confusing. And at that time, personally, I was sort of coming into an awareness of what was going on in the world, and I felt obligated to form an identity very quickly because I realized that I was an American, and before I hadn't really thought of myself as anything in particular.
Did you feel rushed, like you had to make decisions about who you wanted to be before you were ready to make those decisions?
Yes, and I also felt rushed to be involved because I was kind of waiting till I learned more about everything to make a go for what I believed in, but I felt like time was running out and I had to do something right away.
You know, you get to go back and change some of those things if you want.
Well, I don't have as much time. I didn't have as much time as I would like to because I felt like I had these opinions and it was a big rush. All of my friends for weeks and weeks and weeks, all we talked about were politics.
Right.
And that was a big change for us. And I feel like a lot of students, it also changed what I'm doing right now because it made me decide that I wanted to learn everything that I could and to go to a different school.
Now, I'm going to have to let you go so you make it to class. What's the class you're off to?
I'm off to U.S. History.
Well, that's appropriate. Chloe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Connection Bye. Listeners, you heard Chloe say, I don't have as much time as I thought I did. We're going to pick that up when we come back, talking with Kevin Coyne, John Lawrence, and we'd like also to hear from you at 1-800-423-8255. On this, the second anniversary of 9/11, I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. It is September 11th, 2003, 2 years since 9/11. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. On this, the second anniversary, a question for you. What is it today to be an American? Has your life, has your perspective of your own citizenship changed in the last couple of years? Less about how the country has changed, more about how you have changed. 1-800-423-TALK. With me on the program, Kevin Coyne, author of Marching Home to War and Back with the Men of One American Town from Freehold, New Jersey. He's also a professor at Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. John Lawrence is with us. He's the author of The Cat from Hue, a Vietnam War story, a memoir of his three tours in Vietnam as a television correspondent for CBS News. And, gentlemen, I'd like to hear from both of you about what you heard when you listened to Chloe speak. I don't have as much time, she said, as I like. I feel like I have to make decisions I wasn't ready to make. I feel, Kevin or John, maybe you can start with this, that she was using the same phrases that would fit both the generation of Vietnam and the Second World War.
Yes, perhaps. I think that she was really saying that she's been forced to define for herself, at least, what it means to be an American, what her responsibilities are, and whether or not she approves of what American policy may be. I found myself in the last 2 years redefining for myself what it meant to be an American, and interestingly, it was a connection between the Vietnam War and the deaths of the soldiers from my home state of Connecticut that had the most important meaning for me. I went to give a speech in a little town in Connecticut that was commemorating the deaths of the soldiers from Connecticut who had died in Vietnam. And because it was put on by some military-minded people and some very, very patriotic citizens, they had the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of the ceremony, along with a marching band playing marching songs. And I had not been exposed to that since I was a student in grammar school. So I found myself putting my hand on my heart and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance for the first time in 40 years, more than 40 years. And after a couple of days of this, the old meaning of what it felt like to be proud of my country came back. This was just a year ago, last summer. And since then, I've begun to reflect, particularly since the war in Iraq, on my responsibilities as a citizen. And I think I'm trying as best I can as an individual citizen to exercise those responsibilities in what I write as a journalist, in how I conduct myself as an American living abroad all these years, and in what I say to my foreign friends. And one of the things that I try to convince them of are the good intentions of the United States. You know, we went to Vietnam and got involved for the best of intentions. What we didn't realize was that we were coming up against centuries of Vietnamese nationalism, and we didn't suspect that we would not be able to endure in that case. Now we're just beginning to fight and find the depths of Iraqi nationalism, and I believe that we'll be finding it more and more difficult as time goes by to deal with that. But we should be aware of it in both cases, both from our own history and experience with it.
To conclude what you're saying, not necessarily then to conclude that America is a bad nation for being there, which is what shorthand for the Vietnam years has become in recent history.
We're in Iraq for the best of intentions, I believe. It's not for the oil. It's to protect the integrity of American security around the world, but particularly in the United States. And I approved of that.
Kevin Coyne, just a reflection from you on what we heard from Chloe about feeling like she's under some pressure to make decisions about who she is, pressure she didn't feel before 9/11.
Well, I was struck by the juxtaposition of what Vivian said, followed by Chloe, because when Vivian was describing New York, this subdued place, this place standing in disbelief at having been drawn into war, she was describing America in the 1940s. That's exactly what this nation was in 1941 when Pearl Harbor struck. And what Chloe was describing was exactly what the young men and women who were alive during that time felt as well. All those people who rushed off to get married, the people they met at a bar the night before, all those people who had babies before they shipped off to Europe or the Pacific, that sense that life is hard, life is fragile, we have to do this now, time is running out. And that's, you know, the scale of what has followed September 11th is certainly not anywhere near the scale of what followed Pearl Harbor, but I think some of those emotions have lingered.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Wellesley, Massachusetts now. Wren is joining us. Hi, Wren.
Hi, Wren. No, hi, Dick. How are you?
Thanks for calling.
It was interesting. I started out talking about how I wasn't sure that we were an old enough nation to figure out where we wanted to be in the world. And I realized after talking to the screener that I didn't have a clear impression of what I wanted to be as an American, or rather where we are as Americans. I've lived overseas. I've made sure that my daughter, speaks a language other than American, and she's working her third passport. But when I was stationed overseas 30 years ago, and living with Germans who were just getting over the effects of their fathers, and they were finding out who they were and who it was safe to be, it seemed much clearer. Well, we're Americans, and we believe in this, and we believe in that. Now, as the previous caller said, we have very great intentions, but we have an enormous difficulty seeing any ramifications that when we're a giant, we stamp our foot, stuff happens.
Where were you posted overseas, Wren?
I was just outside Stuttgart.
And if you were to step off an aircraft in Germany today and shake the hand of someone on the tarmac, would you be any more reluctant today than 30 years ago to say, hi, I'm Wren, I'm an American from Massachusetts?
No, it was actually
kind of... It's not a pride
thing
that we're talking about then.
Well, no, there is an enormous amount of pride. I mean, when Vietnam happened, and to my mind it was, you know, enlisting for service, although I did it because I got drafted, so I figured I might as well go voluntarily. It wasn't quite my country right or wrong, but I still sometimes wonder if we have a better reason. Are we supporting our country? But then it's like the people who have are looking for $87 billion. We can't not support them, but how come we got here in the first place? It's weird to feel that we don't have an identity. There's an enormous sadness, I think, about New York, because I go there with some regularity, so it's hard not to think of what happened. But it's hard to describe myself as an American. I sometimes feel like I'm an individual American, and I don't represent a country, per se. And I think that ought to be different. There ought to be, you know, the ugly American sometimes, I think, has a greater range than we give it credit. A quiet American would be much better.
Let me hear, if I can, from Kevin Coyne here, Kevin, just on what Wren's describing. And, Wren, thanks for your call, about this uncertainty fitting into the identity of a nation.
I grew up on the same block as Bruce Springsteen, and I went to see him this summer, like half of New Jersey did. And he had a line he used in every one of his concerts. He's toward the end of the concert, he had a little thing about, you know, whatever you believe about what's going on in Iraq, our highest patriotic duty is to ask questions of our leaders, to demand answers of our leaders. And that, I think there's a certain uncertainty now. We've sort of been dancing around it here. You know, well, what do you think about Iraq? What do you think about Afghanistan? There's the whole Democratic presidential campaign is being driven by this uncertainty about where we are now. What has it meant? Everybody was very clear about what the attacks meant. We were attacked. It was Pearl Harbor. Most people were relatively clear about Afghanistan. The debate started when it started branching off, and I think that uncertainty is less the uncertainty he's talking about, and I think is what you're getting at, is less about what does the September 11th mean, but uncertainty about what the proper response is. Mm-hmm. You know, John in his book wrestles, you know, eloquently with his feelings as an American when he first went over there, the best intentions in Vietnam, the best intentions, and what happened to those best intentions. And I think that's the stage we're in now, and that's where that uncertainty comes from.
And John, you spent a lot of your time as a reporter covering militants and wars and terrorists around the world. Has your attitude changed about, you know, how much room they have on the planet to you know, do what they do? Do you understand my question?
Yes, I do. I was in Tehran in 1978 covering the revolution that brought Ayatollah Khomeini to power, and I was very sympathetic with the militants, the Islamic militants, because of the record of the Shah and the Savak and the rest of the brutal people in power. But and that was Iran, and they exported that revolution to Lebanon, and we saw what happened there for 13 years of the civil war, and the same kind of people, not necessarily Iranians, but Saudis, exported their revolution first from Saudi Arabia to Afghanistan through the Taliban and then to the United States. And that's when it became personal for me. I no longer have the tolerance or the liberal-mindedness or the open-hearted sympathies that I had before for poor, oppressed people of that part of the world who want to rise up from what has been intolerable and would be for any of us if we had to live with it, but who have decided to carry their revolution onto our home turf. And I'm angry today with them. I cannot any longer in good conscience support that kind of behavior. It's terrorism. It strikes fear into our hearts. I feel it. I don't like feeling, having to feel that way every time I get in an airplane and get searched and worry about whether or not there's a bomb in the cargo department. I've run out of patience for it, and I'm acting on that in what I write and do and think and say.
Kevin, does this dovetail in any way with what you were saying about a growing feeling of intolerance in Freehold, New Jersey, about the undocumented immigrants, the people there from Mexico, that maybe people in towns across America are feeling, as John's describing, that there's not that same luxury of making decisions that don't necessarily affect us, decisions that are more intellectual rather than emotional?
Right. I think it tests everybody's limits. It takes tests everyone's liberality. It tests everyone's patience. It makes you. I think it takes you back to an earlier time when the borders were clear. You say, "All right, if you're going to attack me, whoever you are, you have now become my enemy." The most nonplussed person I met I spoke to on September 11th and September 12th was a friend of mine who was an Israeli, and he seemed relatively unflustered by it all, and he said, now you know how we live every day. Of course, this, you know, theirs is the death by a thousand cuts. This was one large scale thing, but it strained everyone's sense of what is proper and what is right. It made everyone question, I think, how much can we do?
Kevin, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Well, thank you.
Kevin Coyne is author of Marching Home to War and Back with the Men of One American Town. John Lawrence, nice to hear from you again.
Thank you. May I just recommend that people who are in doubt about their identity as Americans go back and read a little Walt Whitman.
Anything in particular? Song of Myself?
Song of Myself, yeah.
All right. John Lawrence is author of The Cat from Way, a Vietnam War story, a memoir of his time as a correspondent there. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.